Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as we kind of want to do the feedback Friday, actually, the focus really more today is going to be this constitutional president. If we actually had a constitutional president, and what we could do with a constitutional Trump presidency. Now, we've kind of covered already from the beginning. Let me see. The first one, our first shot at this was talking about the invasion. Our second shot at this was talking about the currency, going to a digital currency, and the fact that we need to get back to our gold and silver if we are going to stabilize our economy, period. And that is one of the reasons why the federal government was to only have gold and silver, was for that stable economy. We also covered the inability that the federal government can adjoin the United States to any foreign polity where we would be subjected to any kind of laws, any form of law from any international agency or entity, polity, what have you. And so the last discussion we had on this was the discussion regarding the immediate appeal to the states where Trump should be getting out and leading in speaking to the different state legislatures, going to them one by one and basically helping them, starting with the dark red and working his way through, basically helping them understand that over the next 4 years, he will champion their abilities to actually hold the federal government accountable. Because that's something that, these are things that he could do. So we're going to dive into something a little bit different. And so what we want to do is kind of first go through the obligatories. As you know, it's now or never, and the debt is fraud. I also want to add, because we've kind of updated the website, because Loudon for Liberty, or Loudon Liberty out of Virginia, has a standing prayer, a prayer circle, Monday through Friday, and you're more than welcome to join. I believe it's either 2 or 3, and so I'm waiting to hear from that. And so it's on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, the link. And so as soon as I actually hear what time it is, you know what? I just got a text, and it is at 2. So it's 11 o'clock West Coast time, 2 o'clock East Coast time. And so we've got that. We'll get that up on the website so that if you're interested in joining and talking with, and and this is a great foot in your door, or foot in the door for you, if you're really praying and you're really trying to do what you can, be a part of the solution. Working with Woody, because obviously there's just not a prayer, but there's a little bit of conversation. Working with Woody, he'll actually help you to start getting moving and getting organized with your county. Because there's not one person in America that doesn't live in a county or a parish, you know, a local sub-polity under the state or within the state. Actually, it's not under the state. The state is under these polities. And so that's why we have to start looking at taking back our nation and getting active and starting with the prayer circle, getting acquainted, working with others. So the Zoom is out there, and you're more than welcome to join that if you aren't in a position to be able to start something yourself. So anyway, the last thing I want to remind you is, you know, it's actually Black Friday. Now, on Christmas, we're going to help you understand why we deal with Black Friday, Cyber Mondays, and all of these things. Because the only reason corporations are even recognizing Christmas at all, because they're godless, the only reason is because they're serving mammon. And they're basically using your faith to basically support their bottom line by creating this bogus Christmas, by creating a bogus holiday. Now, this is why we kind of dive into this, because It's not about recognizing him. It's not about actually taking time and, you know, making this a spiritual holiday. This is why it's all about party, festive, and it's just another build on moving America towards the debasing of its morals, moral turpitude, or even, if I could say, another way of ingratiating oneself in gluttony. So, if you haven't heard, you're going to want to hear our special Christmas program. But let me just say this, that if you're really looking to add something to your home, some furniture or furnishings that is, you know, of a wood nature, shelves, what have you, consider reaching out to Timber Nation. I don't think that there's any problem or any type of furnishings that they couldn't provide as an RTA. So give them a shot and give them a call. Their contact information is there. So let's dive into the Trump presidency. And this one actually requires some real examination. And forgive me because my throat is, you know, on its way out. And so what we want to dive into is how the president needs to, and I've kind of mentioned this, that the Department of Justice needs to be locked down. And it needs to be turned and focused and weaponized on this concept of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Not even the concept. It's all about enforcing the Constitution, right? I mean, the president's job is to faithfully execute the laws that are the federal laws or the Constitution, those that are in pursuant to the Constitution. And what law is not being actually enforced? Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. This is something that the president could actually do and would justify the existence of the Department of Justice to go around and making sure that they actually have the process of removing people. Because clearly, this is the supreme law of the land because it is the Constitution. And yet, we don't have any state, we don't have any polity from county up to federal that has a process of enforcing this. And so what we want to do now at this point is actually break this down. And so we've read this before, but I'm going to read it again. Again, this is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It says, "No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States, or under, so civil or military, you know, like the Secretary of the Treasury, or, you know, a Inspector General, or anything like that. No civilian or military person under the United States, or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or giving aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress by a vote of 2/3 of each house remove such disability." So what the heck does that mean? You know, it just seems like it is this galumphrey or a jumble of things. What this is, it is a standard to maintain a qualification for being in office. Now, there are standards that you have to meet to get into office. If you're going to be a senator, you have to be 35 years of age, and I think you have to be a citizen for, 10 years? Something like that. Anyway, I could look it up, but I'm not going to. I know that for Congress and for the House and the elector, it is 7 years. A president must be a citizen for, a natural-born citizen, not for a period of years, all their life. But Section 3 doesn't really mention the president. It only mentions the elector of president. So it includes all members of Congress. It includes the electors, which are the representatives of the people to choose the president. It also, so here's one of the things, we really have never expounded upon the oath of an elector. And I'm not sure, I'm pretty sure, that when you look at the Electoral College process, you look at your state, because 9 times out of 10, when they have the electors meet and they cast their ballots in the next couple of weeks, I'll bet you anything that those electors are not sworn in. And right here, it basically says they are to be sworn in. They are to be sworn in because they have to be required to support the Constitution. Therefore, when they actually cast their ballots, they have to do so constitutionally, which means that if they're actually supporting the Constitution and they cast a ballot and they actually abide by the, you know, the unconstitutional process, then because they should actually vote their conscience on who's supposed, they're supposed to be voted by the people, but they're supposed to vote via their conscience on who's best for president and who would be best for vice president, and not follow the party primary process and so forth. In other words, J.D. Vance may not have been vice president if the Electoral College felt that they could have selected a better vice president. Anyway, so as we basically were kind of reading through this, this is a standard. What we want to do is I want to break this down line by line. And so as we do this, what we want to do is there's 2 points in this standard that identify a group or a body of people who are to be under oath. The first one is the very first clause, and it says, no person shall be. In other words, you cannot be a senator or representative in Congress or an elector of the president or vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. So if I actually change this into more easily understood language, what this means is that those who are currently serving in Congress or as an elector or of the elector of the executives, those in the federal court and those in the federal bureaucracy or in the Department of Defense or militia or any state position who is required to serve under an oath requiring them to support this Constitution. So it's much longer than what he basically read as, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president, vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state. So I think adding more words to help you understand, who does this apply to? Because it's saying that if you're one of these, because you can't be one of these if you do the following thing. And so it's identifying who this is applying to. And it applies to anybody and everybody in the federal offices and actually all federal positions. If you look at the initial act of the oath, the initial 1789 act of administering the oath of office, everybody that was in service of the federal government in the federal positions, they were to take an oath, which means that every person that's working in a federal office, just like in the military or the militia, every person is to be under oath, which means that this standard applies to them. So the next line is this. Who, again, you got this long list of people, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, so now it creates a secondary regurgitation or reiteration of these people. And it's not consistently stated, so we have another way of saying this, but let me read it. Who having previously taken an oath, so a list of people who have previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support. See, it kind of left out the judiciary. It kind of left out the elector, but that didn't mean that they were left out. It's just basically just a summary. Remember, all these people, and so... again, this clause ends to support. So having previously taken an oath, to support the Constitution of the United States. Okay, so this is how I would fill in that Who having previously taken an oath as a member of the aforementioned offices, seats, or positions to support the Constitution of the United States. That way, you don't have to create the list. We've already identified the list up front. So those people who have taken an oath, who have previously taken an oath as a member that was required to take that oath, then it would go, then the next line in Section 3 is this: shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same. Now, the same here is the Constitution, and enemies thereof is enemies of the Constitution as well. But I'm just going to kind of read it as it states. Shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. And so, speaking plainly, what they don't say here is that they're to be removed. In other words, it says no person shall be. What that means up front is any person, any of the following people, must be removed immediately. So actually, you could move this to the very beginning of Section 3 that says any of the following shall be immediately removed and banned for life for engaging insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution of the United States of America, and even those aforementioned servants, or even those following servants who may have not directly rebelled or acted in a form of insurrection, but have given aid or comfort to those enemies, must also be immediately removed and banned for life. And then you create, this is how I would have written it. You create this as the lead line, and then you basically lay out that whole, you know, the whole list of all people who are under oath. Then, and this is, there's a reason why we're doing this. Then the final line is, but Congress may by a vote of 2/3 of each house remove such a disability. To me, that's self-explanatory. But I believe that what they were saying, and if when you read the debates on Congress, this was all about removing people who were violating their oath or actually doing nothing to holding those people accountable. In other words, if you allow somebody to actually vote for a digital currency in your state legislature, you allow somebody in Congress to vote, and you don't call them out like AOC should have been called out every time she opened her mouth and tried to vote in an insurrection against the Constitution. Then all of those people who did nothing to hold her accountable need to be removed as well. This is why I say that the entire Congress and the entire court system needs to be completely purged. But I want you to fathom the real problem that that presents, because we would be literally at a standstill if President Trump just cleaned, he got rid of everybody and said, we have to start over with new people. I believe that's problematic. And so what we really need to do, because if you really fathom the power of the Department of Justice being able to, it's kind of like the Spanish Inquisition, but it's not to be the Spanish Inquisition of the good people of the states. It's only to be a Spanish Inquisition to ensure that the federal constitution and state constitution are being adhered to. Now, it's not the Department of Justice's job to enforce the state constitutions. Each state needs to have their own enforcement. But they do have the responsibility of holding state members, or like it says, any person that is required to take an oath to support this Constitution, the organic, or what we would call the original Constitution that was ratified by the 13 states, just the language of that Constitution and its amendments, not the annotated Constitution and how the federal government has decided to define it and enforce it. That is not the Constitution they're to take an oath to support. They're to take an oath to the plain simpleness of the U.S. Constitution for the United States of America, which right there means that it's not the living Constitution, it's the hard, fast Constitution that must be abided by. Therefore, He could easily go down this path of enforcing this, but I would suggest, this is just me speaking, I'm not the king, I'm not the president who has this responsibility, but I would suggest having two basic processes, or actually having a process, not two processes, but having a, you know, you go in and you look at each individual and you have to ask a basic question. Does this person that is in office, is it reasonable to expect that they would know and understand the Constitution and that what they were doing was a violation? Or is this a person that doesn't really know that they could have gone along with, you know, they were told, this is how we work, this is how it works? Because when I look at Massey may be that guy that has challenged and so forth, but is it reasonable to understanding that nobody is being taught, even at the federal courts, even in the federal courts, and if you look at the Bar Association, if you look at the JD degrees that are being handed out, they are not being taught the Constitution, the truth about the Constitution, so that they would know how to support it. This is why we have a pretended government, or why we have this huge constitutional crisis, why they've created this facade over our Constitution, and all of the members of our government are doing things that they actually have no authority, no power to do. Okay, so as we kind of step into this or move forward, then we actually have to look at, is it reasonable to expect? Now, if you're going into a federal court and you do not understand the Constitution, but I'm going to tell you, there should be a high bar for anybody that is going to be a jurist, because that's the thing that they need to know. And if they can't pass a test, or actually if they've done something that violates the Constitution, I'm going to say that it's going to be a very tough sell to allow them a first and final. Those who don't, if it's not reasonable for them to really understand, like you've got people in the House of Representatives or in the Senate, or electors, or down at the state level, this is where you would probably have a little bit of leniency, and I believe this is where we need to offer them a first and final. However, there are people in those ranks that do not deserve a first and final, where those people have deliberately charged and actually moved forward without any regard. As a matter of fact, they are deliberately doing things that are so far out of the bounds of the Constitution, such as supporting communism, supporting this, you know, healthcare. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, I didn't do it, but, you know, I don't know how to undo it from a person. Yeah, now that we've done this, we got to do this. Because that is an active and direct insurrection. There are lots of people that have just been swimming in that swamp that don't know, and they're swimming along to survive. We have to differentiate between those. And as far as I'm concerned, because I believe that they, not that they deserve it, I think that they will have the opportunity to at least understand the magnitude of their position moving forward. That if they're not willing to actually get on board with full compliance of the Constitution, then boom, they're gone. Because that's what a first and final does. Because there's going to be right around the corner a challenge that they're going to actually have to say, yes, yea, verily, you actually did infract. Or your infractions were so egregious that you're gone. Nancy Pelosi's one of them. AOC's another. Those people who deliberately, Kamala Harris, Biden, all of these people. Now, I want you to understand that when they started this process, there were no permanent emoluments. In other words, when you were to be removed, when you were to be banned from federal positions or from government positions, that means that what was going to be the stipends you were to receive, if you were receiving those, would have stopped. But see, they started ingratiating themselves without actually putting that in the Constitution, which there in itself is a problem, because that in itself is a violation of the Constitution. We'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about this process, because what we want to do is we want to make sure that those who have no reservations about doing harm to the Constitution, you know, those who we, you know, I forget their names, you know, I'm bad with names, but, you know, the four, or, you know, AOC and the gang that she's in, all of them are gone. As a matter of fact, we need to look at Schumer. We need to look at, you know, people who have passed. But before we hit those people who have passed, we need to clean up Congress first. Why? Because now we have this bar that requires 2/3 of each house must remove such disability. So we've got to go in there, and because there's no doubt in my mind, 1/3. Because if you've got that many Democrats, that many socialists that actually want to maintain social programs, that have been doing this and have never asked the question why. So here's another litmus test. Did this person just go along because they never challenged it? Or did this person actually kind of speak up and say, hey, why are we doing it this way? This doesn't seem right. Those people deserve, anybody that had any reservation to say, we shouldn't be doing this, those people stay in office, period. But anybody else that actually just plowed forward with reckless abandon, they should be gone. But we need to actually make sure that, you know, we're not trying to create a scorched earth paradigm. We don't want to necessarily not give people a chance. And as we move forward, the giving people a chance will evaporate. Because once you get your first and final, that's it. And then once we actually, you know, get to a point where the first and finals are really slimming down, because people really understand that we mean it, that the Constitution actually has teeth in it, and that it has to be enforced, and there has to be a very simple process of doing this. And what we're, this is, we need to push this at two levels. We're actually pointing out that a constitutional president could actually set the standard, could actually do this. But the only other way to do this is to work at your county level and get your counties, county commissioners, getting your representatives of the county to be committed to constitutional compliance by creating these common law constitutional compliance committees. Now, any person that is removed by the Department of Justice, the Department of Justice will basically give them a slip and basically say, either the vicinity where you came from, if you're a senator, then the state needs to have a common law state court to determine whether you have violated your oath or not. Because that is something that is not within the purview of the state constitutions. So the whole point of common law courts is to cover those things that aren't delegated. So should the state actually have a common law? Well, they created common law as the law of the state. Every state in the union did that. Only Louisiana has a civil law case or a civil law court. So that's a little bit different, because they do have a civil law court.
but they don't have their jurisdictions correct. So that's one of the things that actually needs to happen. And this is why I think this first purge is really one of those that, you know what, sorry, that it is so bad, you just don't get a chance for an appeal. Because we've proven, and everybody's guilty. I mean, everybody should actually, those who are able to stay in office should just thank their lucky stars that they get a first and final. Because everybody has to see, everybody has to understand and know. I mean, you are a complete denier if you don't think that our government is, with reckless abandon, hurling us off the edge to our utter destruction. If they can't accept the fact that what they're doing has nothing to do with the legitimate functions of government, then they're complete deniers. And, you know, I can't say that we can save them. I believe that maybe over time we can, but I can't say that we can. Because this is a free will thing, folks. You have to choose what you're going to do. You're either going to follow the law, and you're going to either do the right thing. And I understand. You know, this kind of goes to what I want to talk about next as far as the paths go. Because, you know, it just came to me actually yesterday when I was looking at, you know, the paths, and I was thinking about, you know, why is it so hard for people to, you know, to buy into interposition? It is clearly the path that requires the most amount of effort. The most amount of effort, because we have to work together. There is the most difficult task a person can take on is to actually create a marriage and succeed in that marriage. Because what that requires is two people to work together for better, for worse, and actually, you know, end your marriage or end your life in such a strong bond and strong union of love. That takes work. And the old adage, there's nothing in life that is worthwhile that doesn't require work. And the more worthwhile it is, the more work it takes. You know, when you look at the value of education and the work that you have to do to get to that level of being a scientist, of being a doctor, of being somebody that has, you know, such power in their hands of creating new technologies or saving lives, folks, that takes work. Is it worthwhile? Absolutely. Is it common that people dive into that? No. As a matter of fact, there's going to be lots of people that won't down interposition. They just don't have the time. When we look at the revolution, there were those who actually finally shifted to do the right thing, and they interposed. The rest of America either funded them, helped them, was sympathetic. There were even those that actually openly challenged them and fought them, and they maintained loyalty to the British crown. Remember, this is why we go over the Tory Act. So when it's not all or none, it is a it's a huge sundry of different positions. So when we look at this process of who fails, who wins in the constitutional president's position, then I believe that there has to be a good, and I don't want to say fair, but there has to be a just way. But the Constitution demands full compliance. We have a mess because we don't have anybody. We have no one in office that is fully complying. Now, we need to separate the moral from the actions. In other words, there are going to be people that we may not like that may be adulterers or sinners, even though we're all sinning. My point is this, that we need people that are hardcore, you know, they may have their own personal problems, but they'll at least do the right thing when it comes to obeying the law. Because once we create the teeth to this, then down the road, we can start restoring the morality. Understanding the contract and understanding, you know, the black and white of either you do this or you're out, then I think we can start moving forward. I've clearly believed that the only way America can actually become righteous again is we first have to obtain constitutional compliance. Because look at how many churches have abandoned the word and have abandoned the scriptures and actually have started basically placating, you know, to all sorts of just perverse narratives, perverse ideologies, or perverse practices. The point is that we can't get there until we get the agnostic and those good people that they're not immoral. They may just have these problems. They may be drunkards. They may, you know, be doing some drugs or what have you. Just remember that even though alcohol, excessive alcohol, drugs, or what have you, is, you know, repugnant to, you know, a good moral person, it doesn't mean that they can't actually do a good job unless they're addicted and those types of things. My point is this, folks, that we actually have to take the standard and hold people accountable. They must rise up when somebody in Congress tries to put a bill on the floor. Every person that fails to rise up and say, that is an unconstitutional bill. How did it get in here? Who brought it forward? And those people who sponsored it and helped get that bill in are gone. Amazing. Once we start doing that, it really will actually allow the paving of morality to be restored. Don't mix this up. It is not the morality first. The only reason that they've been getting away with killing babies is because we've made it a moral issue instead of a contractual issue. Contractually, they have no authority to make the decisions to allow the government to support it or any of that. It's not about morality. It's about the contract. We can't get the morality back, or we can't work on restoring the morality of this nation until we get the restoration of the rule of law. So we're going to have, you know, we're going to have to hold our nose and elect people. It's okay. As long as they hold the line. If they can't hold the line, they're gone. This is how it has to be done. But we need a constitutional president who's willing to do that. Because if he does do that, then actually we'll actually start seeing the states doing what is necessary. I want you to think about this. Now, let's dive into the state. Once we've started cleaning up Congress, the states are going to have to provide, and actually the message needs to be clear. Hey, this person's been removed. Don't think about sending a person with the same ideology that you're going to want them to do the same thing, because we will remove them just as fast. Send us a person who is actually going to honor their oath of office and support the Constitution. None others should be applying. And oh, by the way, state, you may want to start invoking tests to ensure that the person that you're putting into office can pass a basic constitutional test. Now, we're not talking about a simple yes or no, you know, five or six questions. I want to see these tests be so thorough and so academic. Now, just remember, it's to make it to the office doesn't mean that you have to pass the test. Your score gets advertised. And when we, the people, actually see that there's lots of people with 20%, maybe 15%, but one or two with 80 or 92%, then it is your fault if you've elected somebody with 20% and they get removed. It's your fault. And so you should have to pay for the election to replace that person. In other words, your district, your county, what have you, your state, you're going to have to pay. And we need to start shifting the state budget from actually carrying the burden to where it is apportioned out so that the counties actually move this to themselves, where they actually control that, all that except for federal elections. That is managed by the state. But state elections should be managed by the counties. And therefore, the counties need to pay for it. And if you do this, if you actually do this, then having primaries at the county level will go away, other than the presidential primary. In other words, the off year, when the presidential election isn't happening, why would the county want to actually pay for two elections? There you go. And eventually, we'll start stopping these elections that require primaries altogether. And we actually start moving forward in following the Constitution and not allowing the party to control this. Back to this point of a constitutional Trump presidency, he should shut down, lock down the Department of Justice and their actions in going after any state person, what have you. And they need to realign, and he needs to put in basically a constitutional force, people that literally understand. Here's the problem. There's very few people that understand this. There's very few people in government or anywhere. Folks, when we talk about reading and understanding the Constitution, when we know that the majority of the people today don't even care, then what is that percentage? Is it 1%? 1% of 3 million, what is that? 30,000? 300,000. There you go. So 300,000, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Do you think that there are 300,000 people in America today? Am I right on that? Yeah, so 10% of 300 million would be 30 million. And 1% would actually be 3 million. My bad. I was thinking of 100,000. So 3 million people. That's even a tougher number to come up with. I mean, I think 300, which would be a tenth of a percent, that would be still a tough number to come up with. I'm not sure that we can find that many people that understand the Constitution to that degree. And that's an indictment. That's how bad it is. So we actually have to come up with, you know, a way to get everybody to clearly come on board. And I honestly think that the litmus test for the Department of Justice should be very easy. There should be evidence, because guess what? Every speech that is given, everything is recorded. Did any senator actually mention the calling up of the militia? No. Did any representative in the debates or on the floor, when they get up and speak, any of them call for? So there's a huge lack of action by everybody. So this is why we actually have to start looking at where did they actually have reservations of doing the status quo. So the Department of Justice can actually start stepping in and removing those who are directly acting bad. And basically, they could easily remove over a third of both houses and say, okay, now you've got new people coming in, but you do not have, this is why it needs, you can easily come up with over a third. And when you have over a third out of each, then there's no way that this Congress, both houses of Congress, would be able to produce two-thirds votes to actually allow these people back in. The reason why you start with Congress is because that is how they get back. You want to shut the door to make sure that they cannot come back, because then they can start protecting the judges. They can start protecting everybody else, all the evildoers through the federal bureaucracy, the federal courts, and through the states. So it has to start with Congress, because Congress has the power, and we have to restore the constitutional power and paradigm in Congress first. Therefore, and I'm telling you, it would probably be lucky if we saved one half of both houses, because you've got that many Democrats and rhinos who have been, I mean, John McCain, a Republican, he would have been gone. McConnell, gone. All of these guys, had we been enforcing this a long time ago, and we did this a long time ago, all of these guys would have been gone. The day we start standing on the Constitution and start removing people, boom, boom, boom. Now, there may be other ways of implementing this. I'm not the king. I'm just laying it out and giving you a suggestion. I believe that the power is in the president's hands, because as the president, he has the responsibility of faithfully executing the laws. Executing the Constitution falls under his umbrella. Holding every person accountable by using the Department of Justice in executing that law, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, is in his power. So with that, with a little bit of time left, I want to dive into the different paths, because when you really think about it, we start looking at the amount of effort that it takes to actually get success. Now, with the party, you know, wide is the gate, and their success, what they consider success, is getting a Republican in or a Democrat in. Not holding them accountable, but by so doing, of what their gauge of success is, they're successful all the time. Look at how many people in office are not a Democrat or a Republican. I mean, they have a high percentage rate of success, and it doesn't take that much effort. You actually get the counties, the Republican Party in the county, to actually start holding constitutional compliance, they're going to see a huge increase in effort. Holding people accountable is a lot more work than just getting somebody voted in. Okay, well, yeah, we hope that it could have been a little better, and it's only getting worse because of that paradigm, because of the laissez-faire policies that the parties have. What about the court system? Well, the court system is very simple too, because do we all collectively put money in for every court case to try to go after somebody? No. Somebody comes along with a wallet, or some organization comes along with the donations of people, and they go in and they pursue a court case. And in the court case itself, does that case solve our problem? Does that put this nation on? No, it is so myopic that it is incapable of solving the problem, the grand problem. In other words, they could never get to a position, the Supreme Court, even at the Supreme Court, they cannot get to the position of actually forcing the government into compliance. They don't even have the power to execute it. They only make the rulings on whether, you know, the action was within the this is their constitutional power. They can only determine, one, whether they have jurisdiction, does it arise under the Constitution, and was the action within those boundaries as provided, those definitions provided by the ratification. They don't even follow that process. They actually have the laissez-faire jurists, or I should say jurisprudence is laissez-faire. Now, there's some morality, some mental thought, but it is not the law. This is why we see these cases that actually maintain, like the Chevron case. Overturning the Chevron case did not get rid of the bureaucracies. They basically said, no, we want, they should have actually said none of these bureaucracies are constitutional. Had they done it the right way, but they could not enforce it. In other words, they couldn't actually call up the militia to actually start going into D.C. and standing down these bureaucracies. That would require Congress to do that. And actually, it would require Congress to defund them. It would require Congress to stand them down. But actually, it requires the states to effectively do that. Because until the states effectively do that, then the next Congress or the next president... Now, if we're actually getting into compliance, it would snap. In other words, Congress would not, if we actually had a constitutional president enforcing the law, this one thing of removing people for failing, for actually enforcing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, would actually do more good and actually put America back on the path where the states would then be able to step in. And the states would be able to hold the federal government's hand and say, look, you really screwed up. It's not your fault. You know, this happened a long, long time ago, and we've all been duped, but we now see the light of moving in the right direction and the direction we need to go. This would put America on a path once and for all of being able to live within the confines of the Constitution and actually create a form of government that allows America to become the global force that it should have been. So back to the courts, though. The courts, it's a simple, easy process that can't solve the problem. Let's look at the convention. Going into a convention, will they be able to have the outcome that would actually force the compliance or get us to move in that direction, you know, in any meaningful way? No, because that would require 3/4 of the states to get on board. And I'm telling you right now, we already have everything in the Constitution necessary. There is no amendment that they could write. But even if they could come up with some spectacular language that would actually just go, oh, wow, that's the 10th Amendment to the core. Because the 10th Amendment states everything. All powers not delegated are reserved. So everything that they're doing that they don't have the power to do must be ended immediately. So why would they need to actually have a convention? They don't. There are needs for amendments, but none of those amendments that we need actually will get full compliance. We already have that in the Constitution. The demand for full compliance is the 10th Amendment. That's what Madison states in his report. And we're going to be covering this in the next few days, because Tammy and I are going through Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions. Folks, you need to listen these next few days. These last few days and the next few days, we're covering some of the most core, essential things that you need to understand what, why, and how we have to move forward. Anyway, nullification. Nullification won't do it. It's just ignoring the problem. Secession, going down and becoming a sovereign, a state national, a general assembly, or anything like that, that does not get the government into compliance. It's basically dropping out. Those paths are easy paths that seem, oh, well, I get to save taxes, or, oh, I get to be a power broker in the parties, or, oh, I get to have a win on the case, or I'm a jurist or a lawyer, and I get to bend the law. None of these paths are capable of restoring our constitutional framework. This is why interposition, when you look biblically, the narrow path is the difficult path. No rich man can get into the... It is easier for a camel to get through the eye of the needle than a rich man to get into heaven, folks. It means that anything that's worthwhile takes effort, and we need your effort. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.